compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Thank you for listening to the program. I sure appreciate it. The easiest way to reach me is to give me a call at 888-914-9149. That's our number. We do have some lines open right now. 888-914-9149. You can also reach me on Twitter. And my address there is at Patrick Madrid. And let's see, I think Cyrus, you saw something on Twitter that was cool and you told me about it, but I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, something I didn't know you were going to ask me about it, and I already, let me see if I can find it real quick.
All right.
Yeah, it was.
I thought you'd have it ready.
I thought I would too. Well, I didn't know. My bad. I should have had that ready.
That's all
okay,
right.
Here it is. I got it. Hey, that didn't take too long.
You learn from your mistakes, Cyrus.
Father Eric Sternberg said, "The Patrick Madrid Show is the best. Rocking in a particularly good way today. Thank you, Father."
Right on.
Yeah,
cool. Thank you very much, Father. We appreciate that. So this program is three-dimensional, and it's three-dimensional because not only can you interact with me by calling 888-914-9149, but you can also hit us up on Twitter. My address is at Patrick Madrid. You can reach Cyrus there at the at P Madrid Show account, and let us know what you think. If you have a comment or question that you can't call in with, just let me know, and I will be happy to answer it. By the way, Cyrus, I posted this yesterday. I just thought it was interesting. It was, well, you can see it. It's on my Twitter feed. There's a picture of a map of the United States, more or less the eastern half. And superimposed over the top of it is a map of Vietnam. Now, Vietnam before North and South Vietnam. And what's striking is that the northern part of Vietnam is way north of Milwaukee, like just about up to the UP of Michigan. And the lowest point of Vietnam, as you'll see on the map, is down in Tallahassee, Florida. Now, it's not very wide. I would say that the top part, the what previously was in northern North Vietnam, the main part up there, is give or take roughly about the size of Ohio, maybe a little bit less than that. But I mean, it's a sizable country. And so it's interesting because it's superimposed over the United States, and the caption on the picture is Vietnam is probably bigger than you thought. And that's true. I mean, I never really gave it much thought. But when you see it in that context, you see that it is, it's not terribly wide, but it's a very long country. And I thought it was interesting because, as often happens, sometimes I'll post something, people will read into it something that's not really intended. So like one, I don't know if this is a man or a woman, but the person said, "If you're trying to say what I think you're trying to say, 100%. So I said back, "What do you think I'm trying to say?" And the person honestly thought that picture that I shared, the person said that the U.S. government would have a huge problem on its hands trying to fight a war at home. And I had never thought about that. I think maybe he or she is referring to how many firearm owners there are in the United States and how everybody's packing. It wasn't even a thought of my mind. I never even thought about that at all. So I put a disclaimer below that saying this picture is not a political comment. It's not a comment about anything. It's just an interesting map juxtaposition. And then somebody else posted a link to a place, you'll see it if you go there, where you can actually do this. You can compare countries and states and just superimpose these different sizes of countries so you can see how they compare size-wise, like, you know, the size of the United States compared to Russia, for example, that kind of thing. So anyway, just interesting. But it was a reminder to me about how sometimes even the most innocent of images or the most innocent of comments, some people are searching for a hidden meaning and may sometimes, and actually rather often, it seems, wind up assuming that this means something that it really just doesn't mean that at all. Have you ever run into that, Cyrus?
I
run into that fairly frequently.
I like Robert Santiago's comment. Who knew Tallahassee was in Vietnam?
That's right. Okay, 888-914-9149. Do we have Gene still? I know he was holding for a long time. Is he still there?
Yep, right here.
Gene in New Mexico? Okay. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm a first-time caller. I had a different take on the coronavirus and the jobs and stuff that we were talking earlier. Anyways,
okay.
I'm an anti-vaxxer, but I took my, I changed my mind. I took my shot, my first shot this week. And I don't know, I thought the other day, I thought to myself, well, the demon, the devil has a higher thinking than we do. And he's very deceiving and stuff. So the coronavirus hits and the government stops all kinds of jobs and everything. So then God is almighty. He uses people to create, he created a vaccine or something to help us out. So then the devil says, well, use the government to enforce it on people and maybe they won't take it. So they enforce it and we push back and we don't take it. And it's for a higher cause for the devil. So maybe everything will fall down and crash. And then he can really start what he wants, is a one world order and one world currency.
That is an interesting theory. So now that you've received your vaccination, what is your sense of it now? Or did you just explain that to me?
Yeah, I explained it. I took it from my family. They told us here that either you take a shot or you're going to have to quit. And I had a hard time with it and stuff. And I struggled with it. And people would tell me, don't take it, don't take it. Because in 4 years, y'all watch all these people die. And I told them, well, what's the use of being here if everybody's going to die? If you're going to be by yourself or be a zombie or whatever. What's the use of staying here by yourself? If our church is taking it, our bishops, our pope, everybody's taking it. And they're the institute that Jesus left here for us. And we don't follow them. Who else do we have to follow? Nobody else.
I understand what you're saying. Well, thanks for sharing that with me. I appreciate that. I was thinking about something I saw, and I appreciate your phone call. Cyrus, I saw this on Twitter yesterday. Have you ever seen those memes where you've got the lady kind of concentrating on very, very, very complicated math formulas? And you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the lady's looking at the complicated math formula, trying to figure it out. And the caption reads, the protected need to be protected from the unprotected by forcing the unprotected to use the protection that didn't protect the protected.
Yeah, you lost me.
Yeah. Yeah. So it basically is saying, it's expressing what people like our Gene, like our previous caller, who at least at one time was an anti-vaxxer, feels that, you know, if the vaccine doesn't protect you, and yet, well, the saying was that the vaccine would protect you, so all the people who now have been vaccinated are protected, and yet they need to be protected, we're being told, from the unprotected, or the people who haven't been vaccinated, by forcing the unprotected to use the protection that didn't protect the protected. You understand it now, right?
Yeah,
it's clear to you now,
isn't
it?
Crystal.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
So much clearer, yeah. Okay, great. So let's continue. Who do we have next? I want to take a look at the screen. Okay, so Christine, welcome to the program. Christine in Los Angeles. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am a first-time
You're welcome.
Caller. So, oh, thanks. I just wanted to get your take on something that happened. I have been looking for a job. I work in software sales for several months, and last week I came very close to really nabbing that dream job, which I would have been, you know, so happy to get. But unfortunately, I got the call from the recruiter that I was being passed on. She was also surprised. But the reason for them rejecting me was because in the interview, I mentioned that I was involved in my church, and the discussion of religion made the executives feel very uncomfortable. And he was concerned that if I talked about church to their clients, it would negatively impact business. So honestly, Patrick, I just don't know what's going on with this, you know, woke world. And I understand for me, religion has always been one of the best parts of my life. And the door was opened in the conversation because I had asked him, what qualities do your star performers possess? I just want to see if I'm a good fit for your organization. And his response was, well, you know, to be honest, they're not just passionate about work, they're committed, but in their work or in their lives outside of work, we find that they're very involved in service and volunteering, which is when I said, oh, that's great to hear. I'm also very involved in my church. So it really hit me hard. And I know, you know, I talked to my daughter who's 31, and she said, gee, Mom, I don't know why you brought up religion. You know, that's really taboo. And I thought, well, the door was open. I learned a valuable lesson. But nevertheless, it really put into perspective how our world and has changed from, you know, religion being a good thing to now it seems to be a bad thing. She even said to me, Mom, they're going to think you're just this crazy church lady if you go to a church. I thought, wow, exactly. Is that what's happening? So just curious, what do you think about this?
Well, I am sorry that you missed out on your dream job, but as you were saying what happened, I was thinking, well, you know, good for you that you don't have to work with a bunch of scaredy cats, people who are that sensitive that they can't abide somebody who might be religious. You're probably better off for it, if I had to guess. I mean, this is one of those oddities of the whole situation. I bet you those same people that passed on you as an employee would be so proud of themselves and are very proud of themselves for how progressive they are and how tolerant they are and how diverse they are and their commitment to diversity and all that rigmarole. And yet they showed themselves to be intolerant and not interested in diversity, because here's somebody who looks at the world differently than they do. I don't want that person. You know, here's somebody who has a view of the world that involves God and they don't, and they can't, you know, they just can't get over their own insecurities. So they took a pass. So I think you're probably in the long run better off for it. Maybe it would have been a miserable experience working there. Then again, maybe not. I don't know. I guess we'll never know. But I'm reminded of what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5. He says, blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. So he says, rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so men persecuted the prophets who were before you. Now, you just lost a job opportunity. That doesn't rise to the level, obviously, of how some of the prophets were killed. But you're still sharing in what Jesus said, albeit in a low-level way, when you were passed over because of your faith in him. So there's a silver lining there, and I would keep that in mind as well, that, you know, even if you had to suffer just a little bit, just a teensy little bit for being a Christian, there's a benefit to that, eternally speaking, for you. So don't lose sight of that part of it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, honestly, if it were to, I mean, I would probably do it again, I'll be perfectly honest, because like you said, I would want someone that rejoices and celebrates in those positive parts of my life, and they do become. I'm a fantastic employee at any company where I've ever worked, so it certainly doesn't have any negative impact, but, you know, to be rejected because of my belief in Jesus, you know, in some ways, right. I'm proud of it, right? Because while it hurt me very much that night, and I cried, I shed a lot of tears, but, you know, now I'm going through it, and I'm thinking, you know what? I did something for him, right? And that's a good feeling, so. Yeah,
you suffered a little bit. It was, you know, it was suffering. It wasn't martyrdom in the strict sense, but you suffered for it. And there is a spiritual benefit for that, you know.
Yeah.
You're not a nurse by chance, are you?
Thank you so much. I'm sorry?
I said, you're not a nurse by chance, are you?
No, I work in software sales. Yeah, no, I'm not a nurse.
Ah, okay. The reason I ask is because I've been finding out that there is a massive need for skilled nurses, and lots of medical institutions, they just cannot hire enough nurses. And just thought I would pass that on in case you were a nurse. But I wish you all success in finding that dream job again, a better dream job. And by the way, for anyone else, if you're ever in a situation like that, let me give you a tip on how you can handle that kind of a scenario. So let's say you're in a job interview and it's a secular company. And just imagine you were in the same kind of interview that the lady that we just spoke to was in. And they ask you, You know, what are you passionate about? What are you, you know, what are your things that you're like really into off hours? Try this technique. Before you answer, say this. Say, okay, yeah, I'm happy to share it with you, but let me ask you a question. I mean, for me personally, diversity is very important. Intolerance is very important. Tolerance of people's views and, you know, making room for people who maybe don't necessarily think like I do. It's very important to me, tolerance and diversity. I just would like to ask, is that important to you? Is that part of the culture of this company where you welcome people who have different views and you're into tolerance and you're into diversity? Ask that question first, because the answer is going to be, they're going to trip over themselves to say, yes, of course. We, you know, tolerance is our middle name. Or, yeah, we're absolutely committed to diversity. And you say, oh, okay, good, because I know a lot of employers aren't. You know, some employers, you know, they talk a lot about diversity or they talk a lot about tolerance, but, you know, they actually really are intolerant if somebody has a view that's different from theirs. Okay, good. At least we're on the same page. Okay, so here's what I'm really passionate about. I'm passionate about my church and the stuff that I do in my off hours to help support the community through my church. Now, see, what you've done is you've set them up to make it much more difficult for them to, I mean, they may find a way to pass on you and they'll give some other reason, perhaps there was somebody more qualified or something, but you've actually helped level the playing field a little bit more in your favor, because now you've put them on the spot and they've committed to the ideals of diversity and tolerance. And you're doing this knowing that it may well be that they won't be into diversity and tolerance when it comes to you and your particular thing. So try that sometime. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in a job interview situation. You know, if you're dealing with people in whatever context and you have a feeling that they're probably leftists, they're probably, you know, they fancy themselves or style themselves as progressives, set the table with those questions ahead of time. Then when they try to land on you for what your religious beliefs are or because you're pro-life or what have you, then you've got them now in a very difficult situation because they have to backtrack. And you just point out, you say, wait a minute, I thought you said that you were into diversity and that you were into tolerance. And why, if that's true, then how come you're not tolerating me? I have a view of the world that's different from yours. And isn't that what diversity and tolerance is all about? So you can actually make some room to maneuver for yourself in situations like that. Give it a try and see what happens. By the way, just before we go to our break, I want to pass along a note that I have from the Good Carmelite Sisters in Alhambra, California. Those of you who are listening in Southern California, if you are a nurse, this may very well be something for you. I just found this out. So Marycrest Manor is a... oh my gosh, I'm looking at the picture of this thing. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's on a hilltop overlooking Los Angeles. And it's a skilled nursing facility. And the reason I mention this, the Carmelite Sisters are big friends of Relevant Radio. They pray for us every day. And these hundreds of religious sisters are very interested in helping Relevant Radio every day through their prayers. So I'd like to do them a favor in return and mention that they have a need for immediate nursing openings. So CNA, LVN, RN, they have just all kinds of goodies there. So I'll leave it for them to explain that, but they're really actively looking. And I'll post a picture of this on my Twitter feed. So if you have any interest at all, and if you're a nurse or you know a nurse who's looking for a great job, check it out. At Patrick Madrid is my Twitter feed, and you'll find it there. I'll be right back with more right after this. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
Well, the time's going by quickly, so if you've been thinking about calling the program, this would be a good time to do it. halfway through the show, 888-914-9149. We'll go now to St. John, Indiana, and talk to Denise. Good morning, Denise.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick. I'm going to apologize ahead of time in case I start to cry. For the last several weeks since I heard your show on attending a wedding or whatever of someone who's not getting married in the Catholic Church, I wonder if what I did was wrong. I started listening to you after the wedding. Her wedding was, it's going to be a year this coming Sunday. She's my niece, who I love very much. They were married outside on the rooftop of a downtown Chicago building by one of her close friends, a gay married woman. And my sister-in-law and I were devastated. We wanted, you know, all of our children to be married in church. And since they know that I'm a Eucharistic minister and I teach religion to fourth graders, they said, would you be willing to just at least take some holy water and bless them? And so I did. And, you know, after listening to your show, I was, is it a sin? I mean, I didn't know. I know a sin means you have to know what you're doing. But would it be an actual sin for me to do that?
Well, as you say, since you didn't realize and you probably were a bit flustered and you weren't really sure what to do and you did it without really thinking, that's my interpretation of what you just said.
Yes.
Do I have that right? Okay.
Yeah.
So in a strict sense, no, because in order to commit a sin, certainly a serious sin, you have to have sufficient reflection. You have to have sufficient knowledge and say, I know this is wrong. I know it's seriously wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway. And that doesn't describe what happened to you. Now, from an objective standpoint, would that be sinful? I would say so, insofar as it would be, you know, cooperating with something that is in itself wrong. But you didn't know that, or at least you were so distracted and you weren't sure what to do that you just, you know, it just happened. So your culpability would be greatly diminished to the point of maybe not even being culpable at all. Now that you know, if the same scenario were to happen again, then that would be a different story because you're aware of, you know, what the circumstances are. But I don't see anything here that suggests that you yourself committed a sin. If you had it to do over again, obviously you'd do it differently. But my advice would be, if it's causing you trouble, it sounds like it is, then when you go to confession next, just bring it up and say, Father, I don't know if this is a sin. Someone gave me the advice that it probably isn't, but I just want to make sure that it's out in the open and I've left it here at the foot of the cross. I feel bad about it. And I just want to bring it up in confession and let the Lord handle it. And then that way you don't have to worry about it anymore. It's nothing that you have to be haunted by. Now, you can look back on it and say with regret, gee, I wish I hadn't done that. And if anything like it happens in the future, I'll now know what to do. But you don't have to worry that you've got a sin on your soul. I don't even think it is. But for your own sake, that's what I would recommend.
I will definitely do it. And real quick, I just want to tell you that you really, this is the part that almost made me cry. You are one of the only people other than my father who was brilliant with biblical history. And you mentioned, I say Pliny, like my father, the elder and the younger. Uh-huh. And it was listening to what you were saying, you know, in proof of our Lord, you know, being here and being also a historical figure. I thought I was hearing my dad's voice, and he's been gone for 11 years. So I was like, oh, my goodness, this is the first time I'm hearing this wonderful lesson, because I believe without that, but so many people I have to explain to them, you know, they were like ancient reporters. They were watching and reporting back to the Emperor of Rome. So I just want to say it was like hearing my dad's voice. It meant so much to me. So I just want to thank you for that.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful, and it means a lot to me to know that there's that connection there. Well, may your father rest in peace, and may perpetual light shine upon him. I'm just so glad that the show is helping you. That's awesome. Makes me feel really good.
Not even a year yet, but I listen almost all day, so I really want to thank all of you for what you do.
Thank you. Thank you, Denise. God bless you. Well, that's wonderful. See, Relevant Radio, helping people in ways that you can't even imagine. I love getting those stories on the program every day. 888-914-9149. Now we'll go to Pino in Berwyn, Illinois. Good morning, Pino.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for keeping us on the correct path to the Lord of our
you are most
salvation.
Welcome.
and you're doing a marvelous job. And a question is, yesterday on your last call, you were discussing about the fall and Garden of Eden, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, and I said, well, I thought that the devil, Lucifer, and his third of the bad angels got kicked out of heaven before the fall of the man. But then rethinking this subject, because now we got the serpent back in the play in the Garden of Eden again, it must have been then altogether man and devil then fell out at the same time. Because if he was out of heaven, how could the serpent, as described into the Bible, tempt them?
All right, I've got the answer for you. I think you're going to like it. The reason is because the Garden of Eden, as good as it wasn't heaven. So Adam and Eve were not in the beatific vision yet. They would have been had they passed their test, but because they failed their test, not only did they not see the beatific vision, but they were also cast out of this primordial wonderland that we call the Garden of Eden. So Satan's presence there in the form of the serpent would not be in any way conflicting with the fact that he was cast out of heaven. Now, think about that for a minute, too. The bad angels, those who fell when they were given their test, they didn't even see heaven, the heaven where God is. They didn't see the beatific vision. They knew God, and they had some sense way of seeing God in a certain sense, in a way kind of like Adam and Eve in the garden. They saw God. We're told that they walked with God in the cool of the day. But they didn't see God as God. They didn't see God in the beatific vision, nor did the angels before their test. So it wasn't technically speaking that Satan and the other angels who fell were kicked out of heaven in the absolute sense, because they weren't even there yet. Once the good angels passed the test, they immediately went into the beatific vision and saw God face to face. And once the bad angels failed their test, not only were they excluded from the beatific vision, but they fell from whatever analogous Garden of Eden type of thing that they were in. It wouldn't have been a garden, but they fell from that. So their fall is not in any way exclusive of Satan being in the garden in the form of the serpent. Do you see the way that works?
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Follow-up questions. We know that the devil,
sure,
that the devil can, being, it's only a spirit, and he cannot transform himself to a human, and he doesn't have the ability to do that. And actually, I think we stand higher than the angels because we can reproduce and do the will of God while the angels can't. Now, and we also know, and then why, how could these Lucifer change himself into another God-created creature as a serpent? And,
yeah,
and you know,
so
we hear from theologians that they can't do it.
Well, yes and no. So the devil can do certain things. So the devil is able to take the appearance of physical things, whether it's animals or human beings. There are two terms in Latin. One is incubus and one is succubus. So an incubus is where a demon takes the form of a man, a human being. And a succubus is where the devil takes the form of a woman. And there have been many, many documented examples among the lives of the saints. St. Padre Pio is a good example, where a succubus appeared to him in a very sexually provocative way. And, you know, St. Padre Pio, thankfully, was strong enough in his faith that he was able to push past that. But there are examples of where the devil will take this form of appearance, and you won't necessarily know that it's the devil, but he has the power to take these forms. Now, it's not an actual body. It's not a living actual body, but it has the appearance of that. So in terms of touch or sight, etc., it could resemble that. But the devil doesn't have the power to actually create a body. Only God has that power in a strict sense. So he can take those forms. So there's no problem with him taking the form of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. Now, there's something else to think about here. The angels are more like God than we are, because the angels are pure spirits. And without getting into a whole treatise on angelic nature, which is important, but I don't think we have the time to do that right now, the angels in the order of creation are closer to God and higher than human beings. Now, we are like God in the sense that we have an intellect and a will, as God does. We can know what is true and we can choose what is good, like God does, and the angels too. But we are less like God because we also are corporeal creatures. We have bodies, so we take up space. We're in time. The angels are not in time. They're not in space. They're outside of that the way God is. So when you think of the order of creation, at the top you have the angels, and then within the angels you've got the nine choirs of angels, so the seraphim at the very top and the angels at the very bottom. And below angels then comes human beings, and then below human beings, of course, come the lower animals and then the plants and insects and all that stuff. So it's interesting, and I've often thought about this, Pino. Why did God choose to become a man? Because he stepped lower than the angels to take a human nature. And I think the reason is this, and it's not my original thought, but my thinking is this. The reason God did this is because then in the incarnation, he encompasses all of creation. So had he become an angel, well, there are a lot of other considerations there as well, because angels can't die, so he would not have died on the cross for our salvation. But in any case, all those other things being what they are, by becoming a human being, by becoming man, God encompasses, he envelops, he subsumes, you might say, all of creation into himself, because he is divine and human. He's spirit and matter. So everything is included there. And I suppose there's much more to say, but I'll leave it at that. Now, you're raising some very important questions. I'm glad you did, and I appreciate the phone call. Thank you. Let's go to Randy now in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Randy. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick. Say, Patrick, I wanted to unpack the call that you had a couple of calls ago concerning that software sales gal who they kind of baited her, saying that, we like volunteerism. And then she just naturally said, I'm involved with my church. Let's unpack that. It's an interesting situation as far as Catholics are concerned, that I believe a whole bunch of Catholics are into that way of thinking of volunteerism. That's good. But Patrick, they do not pursue being in the state of grace. So mass attendance, confession could be off to the side, but they volunteer, and that mentally they think, that then is my ticket to heaven. Shouldn't a priority be made on getting into the state of grace? And then volunteerism then is a fruit of that. Does that make sense?
It does. I totally agree with that. So seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these other things will be added unto you, Jesus said, which is a way of saying what you're saying, and that is put God first, put the things of God first, and everything else will fall into place. If you don't put God first, then things will be out of order. And you're alluding to another important point here, and that is that natural virtue cannot save you. So a lot of times atheists get mixed up on this issue. They think that the question that we're asking them is, how can you be good without God? That's never been the question. You can be good without God. You can volunteer and drive the speed limit and be generous and philanthropic, and you can do all those things. It's not a question of, can you be good without God? Obviously you can. It's self-evident you can. But those are natural virtues. And so the natural virtues are great, and we like them when we see them in other people and ourselves, but they're not salvific. So true virtue in the salvific sense involves belief in God, repentance from your sins, seeking to live a life that's pleasing to him. When you have that first, everything else falls into place. But when all you have is volunteerism, which is, I think, the point you're making, correct me if I'm wrong, if all you have is your volunteerism and you do all kinds of things that are nice, but they're just natural virtues, in the end, that's not going to save you. Is that the point you're making?
That's exactly what I'm making. I'm going to bring it home to the Knights of Columbus nationwide. I met a lot of guys that really, they think volunteering to do the pancake breakfast or a brat stand up here in Wisconsin, that's good, absolutely. But yeah, if they're not pursuing that state of grace through the Catholic Church, they're in trouble. They're in danger. Bottom line, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter how many... Go ahead.
Can you see how people get confused or deceived in that way of thinking?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. What I would point out is it doesn't matter how many pancakes you flip. It doesn't matter how many brats you serve. It doesn't matter how many blood drives you donate at. If you're not right with God, if you're not in the state of grace, and that requires loving God with all your heart, mind, and strength and seeking to do his will and going to confession to get those mortal sins taken care of, etc. And there's more to it, obviously, but those are some of the high points. Nothing else is going to save you, no matter how many pancakes you flip. And I think the point you're making is an important one for us to echo, and that is a lot of people... Here's my theory. I'll put it this way. A lot of people, I think, and I think this is true for all of us if we allow ourselves to fall into this rut, we have the capacity to fool ourselves to think that, all right, on balance, I'm a good person, and I pay my taxes, and I check all the boxes, I'm a good citizen, and look, I volunteer, I help out at a soup kitchen, or I demonstrate, you know, to show my solidarity with the group of choice that particular week, and whatever else it may be, and yet there are things in their own lives that are sinful that they feel, maybe without even saying it to themselves, but they feel as though, well, all this other good stuff that I do, all this volunteering and all this other stuff, that makes me a good person, even if I'm living in an illicit sexual relationship, or even if I'm, you know, getting drunk or high all the time, or even if I'm doing something else that I know deep down inside is not right. All these other great things that I do, that's going to cancel that out. And that's not true. So it's one of the diseases, it's one of the spiritual diseases of our generation, and that is thinking that all these volunteering things that you do will save you, or that they'll make you a good person, and they don't. If you're a good person, those things will make you a better person, but if you're not a good person, those things do not make you a good person. It's just window dressing. Excellent question. I'm glad you raised it. Thank you. But we are at the point of a break, so we will take a break and come back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. You may be listening on the Relevant Radio app. Wherever you are, however you're listening, I'm glad you are listening. And I look forward to talking with you. If you want to give me a call, the number is 888-914-9149.
You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principlesclasses.com/Madrid.
All right, let's go!
Keeping it relevant.
Let's go.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show.
Let me hear it.
On Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Crazy music, Cyrus.
Crazy times.
You're feeling funky this morning. Yeah, crazy music for crazy times. I like that. Hey, I don't know if you spent much time looking at this, but for those who are interested, especially if you have a daughter in high school sports or maybe even college sports, somebody went to all the trouble to put together a thread of just some of the males who have gone on to win women's sporting events, including how they performed in the men's category before they started identifying as women. And you'll see a common thread here. These dudes couldn't make it in a dude's world. They were not, you know, terrible athletes, but they weren't among the best of the athletes among men. So it's just very interesting. CC Telfer ranked... Cyrus, this is, talk about a rags to riches story. CC Telfer, that's the current name, was ranked 390th among male NCAA Division II athletes in the 400 meter hurdles category. That was in 2017. 390th. That's pretty far down there.
I didn't even know you could be ranked. I think I'm 391. That's how.
Well, I'm going to show you your ticket to glory.
Oh, good.
I'm going to show you how you can change that. Okay. So your ticket to glory is do what he did. So in 2017, CC Telfer was ranked 390th. So way, 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 way down there. Not a contender. So in 2018, he quote unquote transitions. And now, well, at least as of 2019, he was suddenly now the national NCAA Division II women's 40-meter hurdle champion. So he went from being ranked 390th among the dudes. Now among the women, he's number one. She is what they'll tell me to say, but I'm not going to say that. Now, 2021, he has a shot at the Olympics. On the women's team, of course.
On the women's team. So there's a woman that has spent her whole life training, and a man is going to come in and kick her out of that spot. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. If his time, so he's in the 300 meter hurdles, and I don't know what's considered a great time, but let's say that he clocks in, you know, half a second faster than she does. She doesn't go to the Olympics, and he does because he's a loser in the men's division, but he's the champion in the women's division. So yeah, so she doesn't go. So if that's your daughter and she's been training all these years, and she has her shot at the Olympics, this is why she's not going to go. Let me give you some other examples.
Please.
Laurel Hubbard, 1998 to 2012. Laurel Hubbard failed to qualify for a single international men's tournament as a professional weightlifter in 2013. Okay. So what does Hubbard do? Hubbard transitions. 2014, Hubbard qualifies for 11 international women's tournaments, including for the Olympics. Hannah Mountsey. 2013 to 2015, Hannah Mountsey, as a man, made 22 appearances for the Australian men's handball team and scored 0 goals. In 22 appearances, 0 goals. Can't make it in a dude's world. Mountsey transitions. 2018, Mountsey is allowed to play 6 times for the Australian women's handball team and scores 23 goals. Are you seeing a pattern here? Pro golfer. Pre-2015, golfer Haley Davidson won 0 men's tournaments. 0. 2015, Davidson transitions. 2021, Davidson becomes the first male to win a women's professional golf tournament.
How is this
okay? And it just
okay?
goes on.
There's so many.
It's not okay. I know.
There's so many. But just, if this you, thread goes on and on. These are not isolated events.
Page after page.
This is incredible.
No. Golf, track, soccer, handball, kickboxing, volleyball, Paralympics, what else? Basketball, BMX. Let's look at the BMX one. Chelsea Wolfe, 2014, transitions and the same year takes up BMX cycling in 2017. Wolfe switches to BMX freestyle after discovering it's an Olympic event. Wolf is set to be one of 3 team members for the USA BMX freestyle women's team to qualify for the Olympics. Sprinter Terry Miller, who now identifies as female, wins the girls' 55-meter dash at the Connecticut Open Indoor Track Championship, breaking the girls' state record, indoor record, that is. Second place goes to Andrea Yearwood, who also transitioned. Third place goes to a woman.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is ridiculous. So either you got to set, this is ridiculous. I cannot even believe this is real. And this thread just goes, I mean, there's tons of these examples.
All right, we had a little technical difficulty there. I'm sorry about that. But what I was talking about when I was talking and you couldn't hear me was about the death, the untimely death of comedian Norm Macdonald. He was I would say, one of the most influential comics who've come out of Saturday Night Live over the years. He would do the news program, you know, they would give the fake news. He was known most of all for being a very successful comedian. And if you saw him back in the 90s when he was on Saturday Night Live, he was a cast member from 1993 to 1998, and he was the anchor for the show's Weekend Update segment. It said that he's remembered especially for that segment, for his droll style. And he was. He had a kind of a deadpan style. He was religious, although he wasn't Catholic. And as I understand it, Michael Knowles, my friend, he is a well-known, very, very well-known commentator. And he, from what I'm told, did a little commentary about Norm MacDonald's passing on his podcast recently. I haven't had a chance to hear it yet, but I'm not surprised that he spoke about him because Norm MacDonald commanded a lot of respect. But one thing I thought was interesting for you to know was that they looked back at the Daily Caller on a time when he was scheduled to be on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, and they canceled him because of his hashtag Me Too comments and more. Now, this is, again, from The Daily Caller. The legendary comedian defended comedians Louis C.K. and Roseanne Barr during a 2018 interview with The Hollywood Reporter and said he felt for them amid a backlash against the stars at that time. Out of sensitivity to our audience and in light of Norm MacDonald's comments in the press today, The Tonight Show has decided to cancel his appearance on Tuesday's telecast. Now, Norm MacDonald apologized for it, and that's the one problem area in this, if you ask me. He should not have apologized for it. I don't think so, anyway. During the interview, do we have audio for this, Cyrus?
Yeah,
I don't want to trample the audio.
Had to go on a press,
is this the interview?
No, this is, he ended up going on a press circuit with like an apology tour.
To apologize.
Yep, so he was on The View, and he went on other things to apologize for something that was, so he was talking to reporters. What he said was taken.
I have his comments here. Oh. Yeah, I have his comments. Let me share the comments. Okay, so during the interview, he said, now this is the interview that eventually got him disinvited from The Tonight Show. He said he was, quote, happy the Me Too movement had slowed down a little bit. He said, it used to be 100 women can't be lying, and then it became one woman can't lie, and that became, I believe, all women. And then you're like, what? Like that Charles Hardwick guy, I really thought got the blunt end of the stick there. The TV host Hardwick was accused of abuse by an ex-girlfriend, and he was taken off the air. Following an investigation by AMC, he was reinstated. In other words, she lied. She made up stuff about him that wasn't true. But of course, in the rush to judgment, everybody assumed that because she was a woman, there's no way she could be lying about it. Now, granted, I mean, there are countless women who are abused, so it's not to suggest that that doesn't happen. It certainly does, and we should take all these claims seriously. But in his case, they fired him before anything was investigated, and then when they found out that none of it was true, they gave him his job back. So Norm MacDonald also said in that interview, he says, Roseanne, now Roseanne, her problem was she had said something online that was racially derogatory, and it was a joke, quote unquote, about President Barack Obama and one of his assistants, Valerie Jarrett. And it was a gross and racist joke, no question about it. And she shouldn't have said it. It was wrong to say so. But she had just gotten her Roseanne show rebooted. So they got the cast back together, John Goodman and her and the other members of the cast. And it was green-lighted for at least one series, and it was poised to do very well. And so Norm MacDonald said that he was broken up, and he was really sad for her because she was broken up after the show was canceled. He says, so I got Lewis to call her, even though Roseanne was very hard on Lewis C.K. before that. Oh, boy. Well, we'll pick this up on the other side. There's a couple things I want to share with you about this. Time goes by so fast. Hour 3 of the Patrick Madrid Show is about to start, so please don't go anywhere. I'm coming right back in just a moment. Please stay right there.